Pastor Dave, Lisa, and Abigail had not yet moved to California 5 months ago when questions and concerns began rambling and rumbling through our congregation. Some of these questions and concerns, I admit, came from me. Like, what is there going to become of our church? What will happen to all the ministry and programs we've come to appreciate and depend on? I know in my head we will be all right, but in my gut I'm asking, what is going to become of us? Do we have to have an interim? How long will it take to call a capable interim pastor? Then, how quickly can we move through that interim ministry time and call an installed pastor and get on with life, not missing a beat nor ruffling a feather? To speak of these questions and concerns, let us use today's lectionary lessons from Mark 9 and James 3 and 4, along with our call to worship from Isaiah 43, to present something of a continuation of last Sunday's sermon, to help us focus on some rather practical matters connected with living in and living through an interim ministry time. Please join me in prayer. God of grace and God of glory, be with us as we continue our worship. Settle down among us and in us. Hold our hands. Open our eyes and our ears, our hearts and our minds. Speak to us of holy matters, so we may then rise up in faithfulness and go forth to serve you as we love one another. Amen. Isaiah dares to speak for God to Israel as the people have been released from their Babylonian captivity. Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I'm about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. I feel Isaiah's words also challenge and encourage us to let go of all that was certain and sure in the past and to embrace the ambiguity, the uncertainty that characterizes interim ministry, when there are more moving parts than settled ones, when we may feel discomfort and uneasy, when much may not be firm or in its proper place the way we like for things to be nailed down. But as I concluded last Sunday, I love the promise that God makes to Israel through Isaiah, as Israel is being asked to shed the past and go into the uncertain future. I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. We could even say that this is a prime expression of wisdom, living forward, trusting God to guide us and direct us. As James writes, when we are wise, it will be seen not in what we think or what we believe, but in our works and how we live. James then compares the wisdom from below, the earthly, unspiritual, devilish wisdom, with the wisdom from above, wisdom that is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. I would like to think that this is the wisdom, this wisdom from above, that is expressed in our Presbyterian Church's policies and practices regarding interim pastors, prescribing how we are to live. For example, when we Presbyterians first started to use interim pastors, interims were not prohibited from staying in the church after the interim work was done and thus become the installed pastor. What happened then was often the interim work was not done. Rather, the interim pastor would look around at the congregation, at the building and all this, and the salary, and say, well, I rather like what's going on here. This looks like a good place for me. I think I could be at home here. And the hard work of dealing with the five tasks of interim ministry went out the window, while the interim cultivated friends in the congregation, feathered his or her nest, and focused on what was good for him or her, and not so much on what was good for the congregation. So with wisdom, our book of order, form of government, came to say, an interim enters a congregation, and in that process, leaves the congregation. The interim cannot stay and become the installed pastor. And those of us who are or who have been interim pastors know this. We know we have a contract for a year or two, and then we need to look for a new call. This is what the present Book of Order says, and it is the law of the land in this presbytery. But I must tell you that a new Book of Order is in process of becoming the law of the church, and it says that temporary pastors, like interim pastors, may become the next installed pastor. To me, this is an example of wisdom from below. I personally do not feel that it is a wise move. It goes against everything that I know, that I've been taught, that I've experienced as an interim pastor. For when the interim cannot become the installed pastor, the interim, as a temporary shepherd, is set free. There's a real freeing attitude to focus on what is good for the congregation and not so much on what is good for the interim pastor. The freedom to focus on the five tasks of interim ministry without worrying about the fallout. Helping the church deal with its history, how the church has gotten to where it is. Helping the church discern its future mission and ministry. Helping the church make adjustments in leadership within the congregation. Strengthening the church's ties with the denomination, and preparing the way for the installed pastor. And a large part of that preparing the way is getting out of the way, leaving. A second example of the accumulated wisdom of the church from above, changing to meet circumstances, is this. At first, few churches wanted to use interim pastors, feeling it's an unnecessary delay. We know what we're doing. We know we just need to call another pastor and get on with life. And many, many churches continued in their same old ruts. And a rut is an open-ended grave. Then it was said every church must have an interim. Now it is understood that that's not necessarily true. Now it is understood that seeking and calling an interim is not necessarily an automatic thing, but that interims are most helpful when the pastor leaves after a long pastorate, when a pastor dies, when there is conflict in the congregation, or when the pastor is forced to leave. Now you may be thinking, none of that describes Providence Presbyterian. And you're right. But those of us who were here 7 and 8 and 10 years ago, and perhaps even longer, know that PPC is not the same church it was 5 or 6 years ago. There have been a multiplicity of changes in recent years. We have grown in members, grown in diversity, grown in programs and in ministry. Thus, this interim ministry time for us should not be seen as a hardship, nor as a detour, nor a roadblock, but to see it as an opportunity to try some new things, to give some thought to who we are and how we've gotten to this point and where we're going, an opportunity to discern where God expects us to go and to be in the future, and what kind of an installed pastor we want to call to get us there. This is the wisdom that comes from above, from God. Wisdom that is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. James then suddenly shifts the discussion from wisdom to talking about conflicts and disputes. And you may be saying, why is Glenn bringing up this gory subject? It doesn't apply to us. There are no conflicts here. We don't have anyone arguing about who is the greatest among us. My friends, anytime a church experiences the growth in membership, the growth in diversity and in ministry that we have experienced over the last 5 or 6 years, there's bound to be some conflict. It may only be some differences of opinion or some discomforts that we do not know everybody or know everybody's name or some uncertainty about this policy or that program. In fact, to me, the absence of conflict in a church is not necessarily a good thing. The absence of conflict and differences means we're dead. For every conflict does not have to be a nasty fight with people screaming at each other, with people threatening to leave, and some people already out the door. We may only have a disagreement about the color of the paint in the sanctuary or the time of the worship service. We may need to have a discussion about this or that program or policy. We may need to have a study group to deal with a sticky wicket. All conflicts, every conflict, does not need to end in a rupture of relationships or cause a split in the church. It is a sign of health, I feel, when we can agree to disagree, when we can hold together a variety of viewpoints and not demand of one another a list of cookie-cutter beliefs. It is a sign of health when the tent we are is large enough to include all of us. When Nancy and I were traveling home from Maine a few years ago, we stopped to worship with a non-Presbyterian church. I knew we were in trouble as we walked across the parking lot because everybody walking into the church was carrying a Bible, and we were not. And it turned out that everyone in that church had the same version, the same translation of the Bible, and we did not. Such uniformity of practice, of worship style, of faithfulness is not necessarily a good thing. In fact, we open ourselves up to differences and to healthy discussions when we strive for the unity that comes as we gather in our diversity. Jesus, in our lesson from Mark 9, was on the road to Jerusalem and to the cross with the 12 disciples, teaching them about discipleship and leadership. And what are the 12 doing? Oh, they're not listening to Jesus. They're arguing about which one or the other is the boss of the 12. Which one is the most important, the most loved disciple? Jesus does not reprimand them. I feel with a certain sadness, he takes a small child, a child who in that time and in that society was at the bottom of the food chain, often overlooked, not important, not valued, not a productive member of society, hardly a power player. Jesus sets the child down in the midst of them in the midst of these self-focused, puffed-up disciples and tells them if they really want to be a follower of the Christ, they must become like this child, powerless, a servant, not a boss. Isn't this what James is telling his readers as he moves from talking about conflicts to telling his readers to submit themselves to one another, to submit themselves to God, to draw near to God, allowing God to draw near to them? I feel this speaks to us in PPC in a couple of different levels. First, this is the prime way we deal with conflicts and differences in the church, to submit ourselves to God and to one another. For no one of us has the full truth all the time for every situation. All of us are works in progress. My favorite Peanuts cartoon pictures Charlie Brown approaching Snoopy. Snoopy is sitting on top of his doghouse typing on a typewriter. Charlie says, "I hear you're writing a book on theology. I hope you have a good title." And Snoopy responds, "I have the perfect title. Has it ever occurred to you that you might be wrong?" This is the humbling attitude of submitting ourselves to one another and to God. I've often told church committees with whom I was working, what we as a committee decide to do after a good discussion will be better than what any one of us thought we should do. As Presbyterians, we create lots of committees, and sometimes this process seems to be more of a roadblock than a runway. But as we believe in the holy presence of God being with us, there is wisdom in numbers, in working together with humility and through honest and open dialogue. Second, I think this speaks to us as we prepare to welcome an interim pastor and begin the hard work of focusing on those five tasks of being an interim minister and writing a mission study. For we need to be patient with one another and patient with the process. We need to work on becoming comfortable with ambiguity, the uncertainty. We need to stay engaged with one another, and we need the opportunity, even multiple opportunities, to speak up and to have our say, to get our oar in the water without expecting that everything that comes out of the process will be exactly what every individual wants or envisions. James says, submit yourselves to God, and I would add, to one another. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to us. In this process, there is wisdom, the wisdom that is from above, from God, wisdom that is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy, wisdom that is expressed in our living. As we claim this wisdom and adopt this humbling attitude and allow this wisdom to bless us and to guide us through this time of interim ministry, we will be empowered to let go of the former things and to forget the things of old. We will be opened up to the new thing that God is doing among us and with us. We will be empowered, enabled to see, to discern what God is calling us to be and to do. After all, as God through Isaiah promises Israel, "I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert."